This is the August 12 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Matt Bennett at AgMarket.net. He's in Windsor, Illinois. Jerry Golke joins us from the Golke Group out of Rockford, Illinois. And Jackie Vakes is with TotalFarmMarketing.com. She's in Hollister, Missouri. Mike Zuzulow is here, too, from GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online. Listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at WILLAG.org. Let's start with this question, and I'll begin with you, Mike Zuzulow, GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. The United States Department of Agriculture on Thursday released the first crop production report for corn and soybeans for the year. In it, it lowered the yield for corn by 4.9 bushels to the acre to 174.6, and that dropped total production to 14,750,000,000 bushels. Did you expect this to happen this quickly or even over time?
I did over time, Todd. I felt like after doing the crop tour and looking at the remote sensing information that USDA tends to use during this time period, that we had a lower yield coming. That looked more like a final yield to me from a standpoint, because that's what I was using was with clients, a 174.9 final yield, with the idea that the bean yield could keep going down. So it seemed to me that the break in the yield numbers, USDA is not going to monkey around at all. And we saw this last month as well, that they're going to get the supply-demand numbers out there as fast as they possibly can. And I think part of this is because of the inflationary pressures in the market, that the Washington's very well aware of the higher prices that consumers are paying and the higher prices that businesses are paying. So I'm guessing that's why they're doing this, either that or they've had some shifting in their statistics or how they do things versus what they did in prior years.
How did you arrive at your calculation to begin with? That was lower than most.
Well, I think the biggest thing was the help of the clients in the Western Corn Belt. I don't want to tell you everything because a lot of it is proprietary, but I can tell you that I resampled a lot of corn in Nebraska and Kansas about 3 days before I came up with the final yield. And I had clients in Iowa and other parts of the upper Midwest send me pictures of what they were looking at. And it was amazing how different the fields looked, how different the ears looked, I should say, with the amount of tip back that we saw with the hotter, drier weather. It just came at the wrong time. And we also had a very big outbreak, I think, of Japanese beetles and other issues during pollination that really created some problems with the nick and with the kernels. And I'm sure USDA probably didn't figure that one out yet, but they did do some producer surveys, so I think they probably did pick up on the tip back.
Yeah, so that number you talked to me about last week during the closing market report, so we know that number was there. AgMarket.net also had a number. Can you remind us of what that number happened to be, Matt Bennett, and then talk about where you see things going from here as it's related to the size of the corn crop?
Yeah, our official trade guess for the August report was 178.8 because we were trying to outguess the USDA, and quite frankly, you know, I feel like there's an awful lot of really good corn, you know, in Illinois, Indiana, and parts of Iowa. And, of course, Ohio's got some really good corn as well. We did put a spreadsheet together, which we sent you, Todd, just to try to highlight to people how hard it actually might be to get to trendline yield with the USDA. And we were plugging in actually 214 for Illinois and 194 for Indiana. And, you know, we were really struggling to get much above 175. And so we actually put that spreadsheet together after we put our official trade estimate out. But that didn't really change anything because, you know, I can tell you that we felt pretty confident after the last several years that, you know, the USDA would, you know, probably change course a little bit, but they've come out of the gates really hot the last few years. Last year, of course, 181 and change, they missed it by about 9 bushels. We didn't think that they'd want to do that again, but we kind of felt like that they might come in on the high side. So we certainly were above where the USDA came in today, But I'm not surprised by the number. And where do I see it going from here? My thought process is that, you know, some of the good corn is going to be really, really good. Whenever you get away from the Western Corn Belt and you get into parts of Indiana, Illinois, and Ohio, you get into some amazing yield checks. You know, particularly in our part of the world, we're coming up with better yield checks than, you know, we've ever seen. And so I'm not saying everyone's going to have corn like that, but the 214 yield out of Illinois, you know, may actually tick up just a little bit. I know that's hard to believe. I just think there's going to be some counties posting some incredible yields.
And then I'll turn our attention to Jerry Gulke from the Gulke Group, who is actually traveling in North Dakota this week. And Jerry, I think you've been pleasantly surprised by what you've seen in the soybean fields, but let's get to that in just a bit. What have you seen from corn in that state?
I saw some corn that corresponds to the ratings that both North Dakota and South Dakota have. I'll go through the heart of South Dakota this afternoon, but there's some really bad stuff there. I mean, we knew it was bad from Minot Southwest to Bismarck. There's corn that won't be harvested. I mean, it is as bad as I've ever seen it, you know, in my lifetime. And I don't remember 1988 all that much, but this is bad. Some areas will be zero. And then, of course, where they got the rain, they've got some good subsoil moisture in up here, and it looks respectable. On our farm, North of Aberdeen, about 50 miles, we guess it's about 140 to 150, maybe. I think more towards 140, that's about 20 bushels off of normal. I think USDA and what they picked North Dakota, that might be a little low. I think they're around 103, and the Red River Valley is where 80% probably of all the corn and soybeans are planted. And that's, you know, good black dirt. It's got good soil retention, water retention, I mean, and they've got a respectable crop there. But it's like every day or every week, it says, you know, well, we can hang on one more day and one more week. And it's the, I think it's the cool nights here in North Dakota that helps them every year. And then, of course, we've had a lot of dew and a lot of these tenth of an inch yield showers and our quarter of an inch that pop up and aren't even in the forecast and just keeps things going. So I think beans have got some potential to be better. Corn is, I think we were at like 110 for North Dakota, which is about 20 some bushels less than normal. And I think we'll stick with that. But, and again here, you know, we've been a lot of emphasis on in the media about North Dakota and how dry it is. My goodness, they only produced or grew supposedly 3.4 million acres this year. You know, that's pales in comparison to the high states. So you can make that up in a heartbeat if you get a good rain in the Illinois, and which we got. So I don't know if it matters anymore what they get in North Dakota. What it is, and we'll deal with it.
Jackie Vex, what's your assessment of the USDA report on the corn side?
The 214 in Illinois I thought was passable. Iowa at 193 I think might be slightly high. The North Dakota numbers and the South Dakota numbers, I guess, and Minnesota, I couldn't argue with in terms of yield. When you look at 47% of North Dakota at poor to very poor, and then you turn around and you look at the yield reductions that they made for beans were relatively small compared to what they made for corn. So that kind of tells me that there might have been some rain that came in that was timely for beans. But the part that confused me, in all honesty, Todd, at first glance was, how did we get to 159 million bushel carry-in from 134 last month? And I really had a dig, but they lowered imports by 15 million, they lowered the crush by 20 million, and they lowered the exports by 20 million. And, you know, I got to really question. I know that this is WASDE that's doing this, okay? So, you know, they're very much a straight economical pyramid. It's just something that they do. But I went back and looked at export sales last year versus where we are this year. Now, export sales are not inspections, so the number the USDA puts in here is actual inspections. But we're 99.5 million bushels ahead on bean sales this year already for this coming year, and 445 million ahead on corn. And so, you know, they cut both the exports in corn and beans. And had they not cut the exports in beans, you know, we'd be back down at the 135 million had they not cut the crush. But the part that is disturbing is just the fact that, you know, we're at 2 billion 75 million on beans compared to our $2.55 billion compared to $2.26 billion this last year. And, you know, that's a significant difference. And when you look at corn, you know, it's a similar situation. We're nowhere near. We're at 20. We're 2.4 billion. So I think that overall, I'm glad they made the change down somewhat. I was surprised when the FSA numbers came out today too. You know, they had 90.3 million acres already reported, and 620,000 of those were actually failed acres. But they're only projecting 92.7. And on beans, we had 82.2 million acres that were already, 85.2 million acres that were already reported, with 316 million being abandoned acres. So they're taking all of this very seriously. There's no question about it. But how do you outguess? I mean, how do you guess? That's just it. You know, your farmer survey, you do all those kinds of things. But, you know, we can do yield checks, but it's, especially when it comes to beans, it's going to be the end of the year before we know what's going on. And I know I went into beans instead of corn, but it all went together.
That's perfectly fine. And Mike Suzalo, can you run through the demand side? Because we've already kind of looked at the demand side for soybeans with Jackie, or at least some of the changes. But what the demand side and changes might have been for the corn in both old and new crop. I know carry-in was raised by 35 million bushels and ending stocks. As we looked forward into the new year, we're dropped by 190 million bushels.
Yeah, and I think this is a really key point. I'm glad you asked that, Todd, because I think this is a trend that we'll probably keep seeing because of the high food prices and the rationing effect that we're probably going to keep seeing unless we lose more competition. But it's pretty clear that in the corn and in the wheat, both domestically and globally, we're improving our status in the world as a major demand force. For instance, in the corn, we lost about 415 million bushels of total supply, but yet when we were only lost about 190 million bushels of total demand. In the soybeans, however, we lost about 42 million bushels of total supply and 41 million bushels of total demand. So I think this is where the soybeans continue to be maybe a little bit more of a drag to the marketplace overall. I'm not willing to sell beans here, but I think it's still the trend is that the competition in corn and wheat is going down. And what I mean by that is major exporters, their production numbers, the change today versus July, wheat major exporters for 21 wheat, they lost 4.5% just in 1 month of production. For 2020 corn, they lost 2.8% of production. Obviously, Brazil was the big dog there. And then, in soybeans for 2020, our major exporters that compete with us only lost 0.2%. So I think that's something very valuable for the hedger to think and consider. I still see this as mainly a supply-led rally at this point. But if we don't go up too sharply in prices, maybe we can start to put together a demand-led market as we, you know, go through harvest and into the first of next year.
On that note, going up too sharply in prices, Matt Bennett, while we dropped yield by nearly 5 bushels in corn today, the reaction in Chicago was not a limit move. And certainly by the end of the day, it had backed off even the largest moves it had made. Should we be concerned about that kind of trade?
You know, I think that whenever you get right down to it, it seems to me, you know, we went up and filled the gap there on these corn. And I think a couple of different things happened. In my opinion, there was an incredible amount of hedge pressure. Just talking to John Stewart and Associates, which is our sister company, who does mostly commercial-based business, just an incredible amount of hedging that went on today. And I think a lot of it probably, of course, is going to be in areas where you've got good production. You know, producers are sitting there looking at, 575 or better corn, you know, times whatever yield you want to throw on it. And so I think there's a lot of hedge pressure, first of all. Second of all, it just seems to me like 550 has been a magnet. I'll tell you what, I'm not so sure that we're not going to be trading 550 corn again as we head into harvest. I think that one thing you did today with the kind of lower yield that we saw is that we put an underpinning under the market, you know, so we've got some support for this corn market. It was interesting to me when you talk about demand, you know, that we dropped, you know, exports to 2.4. I think that there was reason that you could have taken them up, but they're not going to do that when you're starting with a 1-2-4 carryout. So, you know, I think that if you do raise production, then you're going to have the opportunity to probably increase demand as well. But I don't think they want to take stocks to use any lower than what it already was. But, you know, what do I think is going to happen? I think maybe is the question that you're asking. And my personal opinion is that we're going to struggle to rally substantially right now. If we can't take a limit move on a 3-bushel lower than average trade guess type yield that we posted in August, I think that you're going to struggle to do it heading into harvest. So we're going to need some help from major Chinese business or some demand driver that we're not necessarily thinking about right now. But the first one that comes to mind would be huge export sales to the Chinese, which I think will manifest himself at some point. I just don't know when.
Jerry Gulke, your assessment?
Yeah, I think Mike is onto something there. And the what we haven't been fixated on in the media is we have been fixated on so much as the ending stocks in the United States and how critical that is and so forth. And I mean, we may have lost sight of the global demand for soybeans from all sources by China. Could be overstated. And you look at what's been actually exported out of Brazil and Argentina and into China, you wonder whether it hasn't been front-end loaded and they didn't buy for strategic reserves and they're going to temper their price with that. But we saw the markets, you know, if you look back at May 12th, we had pretty much the tops in all the markets, including lumber. A lot of commodities topped then. That was about the height of the time where we thought we had going to have a weather market in there. So I think the demand side of this thing is maybe overstated, and I'm concerned that it is in soybeans that maybe this is the lowest carryover you're going to see for new crop, that it could very well be higher by maybe 75 or 100 million bushels, even given the yield that we have now. And corn is a wild card. And like Matt says, you got to get China to come back in here, and so far they haven't been that robust. This is their time they buy their beans, and so, you know, 100 and some thousand tons is you can dribble that in. If you do that every day, every week, you're gonna amount to something. But then we're gonna have to wait, I think, till after the first.
Jerry, as you think about cash sales, what should producers do?
Well, you know, that's a good point you mentioned. I look at this, and generally speaking, I think I get it from most everybody that thinks that we're from 40 to 60% sold in cash, 50% probably. That's where we're at. That's going to come to market. I don't think we're going to buy that back and put it in a bin, in an elevator or something, or at home. So there's going to be grain flowing, and we'll fill that pipeline come harvest. So it's difficult this time of the year to ignore the fact there's going to be grain flowing. And if you get a rain, and we got a 4-inch of rain in our farm in Illinois, that made it a lot easier for me to cash contract rather and maybe put a hedge on or something. But and that's true where you know, rainfall hasn't been even for everybody. So we've got clients that are really dry. They won't sell anything because they've sold enough already. And if you look at the approximately 40% cash sale that we've had, maybe nationwide, a lot of elevators say that's about it. That grain's going to flow into the market, and I think these guys will wait and see before they sell any more cash. In North Dakota, they have a habit. You know, my son-in-law's got 50,000 bushels of spring wheat from last year left, and I criticized him all spring for doing that, and here he is, you know, cash in the bank and it's growing. So that's the mode of operation for a lot of these guys up north, is that they're used to this kind of weather, and they don't want to sell anything until they get in the bank or in the bin, too much of it, and then they'll sell last year's crop when they see next year's crop coming. So, but these kind of prices are going to pull some grain out if it's there.
Jackie Vakes, how are you advising producers to move forward with both corn and soybeans?
Well, you can talk a lot. I mean, you can certainly suggest things. Nobody's too excited about it. Most of the guys right now that we've been talking to are looking for 6 to 6.20 on corn and 14 to 14.25 on beans. But they've got a lot of cash sold already at this point in time. So that's why they're not so. They don't want to be very aggressive. Let's just put it that way. They want to sit back there, too. Some of those guys are concerned about what they're going to produce. I think one of the wild cards in the background, if you look at when we rallied last year, you know, the the U.S. dollar to me is an extremely important factor in how much it's going to either push exports out the door or keep them from going out the door. And, you know, when you saw announcements like China coming out and saying that they're going to increase their hog herd even more, to me that kind of backs up the whole idea that they are going. I mean, if you look at what they bought this year compared to last year, they bought 10 times as much corn so far in this crop year than they did the year before. So I think that the opportunity is there. But as far as our guys go, if they want to do something, we'll put a put in place if that's the case, you know, do a put spread. But otherwise, they're just sitting on cash at the moment. They're really not moving anything very forward, waiting.
Mike Zuzlo, I have a couple of questions about the demand side, and those others can jump in on this. I was thinking about some of the things that have been developing. Of course, the Delta variant, kids going back to school, what that might mean in September, maybe more importantly in October. African swine fever in the DR. APHIS and USDA this week tweeting out publicly that pork producers need to report if their hogs are sick to them. I think that one is really important on the idea that they're very, very worried that particular virus might make it into the U.S. hog herd. And this all has an impact on demand. And this demand structure, I'm wondering how solid it is underneath the marketplace.
Yeah, and you know, this dovetails into what Jackie was just talking about, because the investor class, and this is where I'm in the same camp as she is with buying puts, even though the cash has the premium, excuse me, and the futures market has a huge discount. You know, I still remember the day when July corn went off the board and went off the board at like 682, 683, and then September took over and never got back up there to date. And so that's something, though, it's still in the back of my mind, Todd, because, you know, once September goes into delivery, if we can't find any more corn than we found so far, I think that still there is a gap on that daily continuation chart that we need to think about. So I'm nervous about the downside because of exactly what you're talking about and what Jackie's talking about. What we saw this past week to 1 month, essentially this past month, has been kind of a clinic in the marketplace as far as how the funds look at commodities. And when they see emerging markets as negative and they see China as negative, they see commodities as negative. And I think that goes back to your earlier question, is why weren't we limit up in the grains with corn leading today on the close? I think it was because these outside forces are suggesting to the market that, hey, the Fed's going to taper. They're going to take the punch bowl away. The emerging markets are sucking wind because of what you're talking about. And China's right there at the top of the list. So, you know, as far as the ASF goes, I don't know how this disease is not going to be transferred into the United States at this point. And so I'm very nervous about it as a livestock analyst right now. And so that's why I'm doing puts if I don't hold the technicals. And those technicals are beautiful right now when you look at the wedge formations and the support lines and the moving averages. I think they're very, very valuable.
I think, Todd, when you look at the big picture, September's always been a great month for us anyway, you know, because we start to harvest down south. And therefore, you know, you're bringing new crop grain into the old, you know, into the old crop market. And I think that's part of what the trade was looking at today. And when Mike talks about the trade being sensitive to what's going on outside the U.S., they're very sensitive to what's happening here. And I just think that in general, if you look at a continuous chart on corn, there's a gap that goes all the way up to 619 and a half. But there's also a gap left behind on the December corn down at 477. And so, you know, pick your poison. Which way do you want to go? I think WASDE, I truly expected WASDE to kick the ball to NAS and just say, hey, you guys are going to be out on the field. So I was pretty shocked, to be honest with you, to see the kind of drop that we actually saw in corn. And I feel that they've got to feel pretty doggone confident that's out there and is going to be the way it is. And so I think there was a lot of profit taking today, not just hedge pressure on the marketplace, and that's what really brought us down. Now, tomorrow, I think we'll see a much better picture of what the report's really all about.
I'm going to come back to you now, Matt Bennett, and talk a bit more about what Jackie ended up with here, is that there was pressure in the marketplace that you talked about. There's some profit-taking in the marketplace. Farmers, and I think everybody probably will agree with this, as Jerry Golke mentioned, are somewhere between 40 and 60% sold on their corn. Should they be satisfied with that this fall and just put the corn away in the bin and ride out what might be an interestingly good or bad situation? Should that be their plan, do you think, Matt?
Well, I kind of have to agree with, what Mike and Jackie said, is that some protection. I'm okay with someone, rolling the dice on this. And I say rolling the dice because, if you take the kind of yields that we're looking at in parts of the Corn Belt, and I know it's not everybody, but there's a lot of producers sitting on what probably would be the highest net income they've ever seen in the areas where the yields are really strong. If you're thumbing your nose at that, then you're kind of rolling the dice and tempting fate. Now, what's the flip side of that? How could that pay off? I mean, there's no doubt that at a 1-2 carryout, if, for instance, this yield doesn't grow much, I think there's room for corn demand to still be able to be fairly impressive. If you're going to come into a report like this, I guess, friendly versus expectations, and end up the day up just 14 cents and essentially kind of in the same type of range we've been in for quite some time. And that tells me that demand could actually stay pretty strong, if not come to manifest itself like our group thinks it will, with 5.6, 5.7, 2.6 or 2.7 as far as exports are concerned. So I guess from a producer standpoint, I don't mind putting the corn in the bin. I just don't want to put it in the bin without any sort of protection, because I think that you're taking a big gamble there. There's certainly opportunities. If you haul in across the scale this fall and it's above $5 corn and you're harvesting well above APH yields, there's no reason whatsoever, in my opinion, that you don't go ahead and move some more corn. But again, I do like using bins. I do like the idea that during the middle of harvest in the Eastern Corn Belt, basis is not likely to be near as strong, of course, as what it's going to be in the Western Corn Belt. There'll be some opportunities to hedge on farther out into maybe the March or May, and then watch that basis maybe come back to you later in the year, especially if we're going to be as snug as what the USDA is indicating right now.
Hey, Jerry, another question for you. This one, a technical question. What do the charts show you on the weekly nearbys, or just what kind of formations are there at this point that you've been watching carefully?
Well, it's been interesting. The weekly stuff has been negative right along, except for wheat, Chicago wheat. Minneapolis seems to have priced in there. They're over $9, seems to stop them except for today. And on a daily basis, that's wedge formation going sideways. A lot of the technical things are momentum-oriented or moving average type of thing, where a sideways market just destroys all good plans. But from a weekly standpoint, we look back and we had sell signals back in May, as I mentioned. That has not turned around yet, but tomorrow isn't over yet either. But I think from the way I look at it, and I'm not a fan at all about buying calls, take a look at what it costs you to do that. Why did you decide the farm to drain the swamp, so to speak? And then I look at it and say, well, what prices, what's going to happen to demand if price does go to this $6 or $6.50 or whatever? Who's going to use it? You probably can't put it to use, and then you invite more competition somewhere else. So I look at saying, if I'm going to put it in the bin, I'm going to sell it to somebody. I have them, I'll sell a call to the right to own that corn 20 cents higher for 50 cents a bushel or 30 cents, same way with soybeans. And there's a level up there where it says, if it gets that high, I don't care what Jerry says or Matt or Mike or anybody, that's a lot of money, and I've got to start thinking about next year's crop after that. So I think our focus should be that we have a tax problem at the end of the year, and how we arrive at that, of course, varies with the individual. But I've always liked selling calls against my inventory if I decide to keep it.
Let's get a final note from each of you. Mike Zuzulo, GlobalComResearch.com. Out of Atchison, Kansas, we'll start with you today.
I think it's been a really nice show with everybody. I think there's been a lot to gain in terms of knowledge here, Todd, and hopefully producers will think seriously about it. My final comment is that wheat is still our leader because of the world numbers. We noticed that the April high in soft red was 773. The May high was 773.5. Thursday's close was 751. Let's see if we can't take those spring highs out. If we can, that should really help the corn market quite a bit. If we can't, then that's kind of a wake-up call to me from a standpoint of maybe the wheat market is flagging something.
Jerry Gulke of the Gulke Group out of Rockford, Illinois, and traveling in North Dakota this week.
Yeah, I found it interesting that USDA agreed with the Brazilian crop, yet they lowered our exports. And who's going to fill that void if Brazil can't export the grain? So there's some reason to believe that those that think that exports could go higher, maybe we got to wait a while for that to happen. And that's the wild card out there. I look at it also, someone mentioned something about inflation, and a friend of mine that used to work at USDA says NASA and USDA are going to come out with numbers and juggle them around to make sure that inflation, the guys that buy our stuff and use it, the soybean oil, or the we had the millers the other day telling us that, telling President Biden that we had to do something because the cost of bread's going to go higher, and that's going to affect everybody. And I think they're going to try to tap-dash this thing until either we get a better crop that they can manage it, or somebody doesn't use it, and like China doesn't come in and buy grain like they're supposed to, I guess, under contract, and also as most people think they are. So there's just a lot of elements out there playing, and this hog thing is, almost any black swan. And I was around when mad cow disease hit. You know what happened then, and it happens usually on a weekend and when you least expect it. So these are wonderful times to make difficult decisions of making money. And we waited a long time for this. I don't want to see this let it go by the wayside.
Jackie Vakes from Total Farm Marketing in Hollister, Missouri. Your final word.
Well, Todd, what I'd like to point out is maybe something that people are not thinking about, okay? And that is how far we are above the crop insurance guarantees. You know, we're $1.15 and a quarter above the corn today and $1.54 on November beans. So if you don't want to do puts to protect crop, for heaven's sakes, at least do something to protect this crop insurance. I mean, we could see if this market would turn around for some reason, we could find ourselves back down into that 450-460 area. And, you know, they've got protection from 458 down and 1187. But that's a lot of money that's laying on the table. So I'd say talk to any of us. We can figure a strategy out for you. But just be thinking about always that you earn money on the farm, not just producing the crop.
And finally, Matt Bennett from AgMarket.net out of Windsor, Illinois.
Well, you know, Todd, coming into the report today, I think all of us probably had a little bit of uneasiness. You don't really know what to expect. But coming out of the report, you know, and you're still looking at, 570 plus December corn, the producer is in a fantastic situation. 2021 could be extremely profitable for a lot of folks. I know that not everyone has a big crop coming. But in a lot of parts of this Corn Belt, there's a lot of money to be made this year. So I sure hope that people are running the numbers, realizing just how much money is on the table, first of all. And then second of all, thinking about what is going to be the best way that I can really make my farm more healthy going into the next few years. Because as Jerry said, there's no guarantee. There could be a black swan event around the corner, and right now we've got one heck of a valuable bird in hand.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like. You can do that at willag.org, willag.org. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Jerry Gulke, Jackie Vakes, Mike Suzalo, and Matt Bennett. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.